welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from Washington, D.C., and our first order of business is to wish everybody, all the friends, listeners, supporters of the program, of the Tax Wall Street Party, of the United Front Against Austerity, admirers of Washington Grove Institute here in the D.C. suburbs, wish everybody a very happy new year, a happy and prosperous and healthy 2016. It is a year when grave dangers loom, but where important opportunities also beckon. And because we represent the continuity of the optimism of the celebrated philosopher Leibniz, right, the optimism the scurrilous Voltaire tried to satirize his Candide. Well, we are optimistic, so we wish to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, and not mess around in a gray area. So let's look at the world that stretches before us. I have to tell you, I am recording on Tuesday, December 29th, but you're going to be hearing this for the first time on New Year's Day. And it's the day, if you want to, you got to get to Vienna for the famous concert. But for those of us who can't, I think we can watch this on cable TV. So where do we stand? The first important pattern that we need to deal with is the question of ISIS. Now, again, ISIS, my shorthand for ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, the Islamic State, the Caliphate, call it what you will, ISIS for short, they are in big trouble. And the interesting thing is, the rotten U.S. media always incline to the side of evil. If you want to understand how the U.S. media work, forget about, for a moment at least, the political factions. It's just that those media people actually recognize evil, and they prefer it. And the way you can get the most mileage out of the current situation for evil is to pretend that ISIS is not on the ropes, to pretend that they're not collapsing. It's interesting that the premise of all of the Republican debates is that ISIS is gaining in power. ISIS is coming after you. Lindsey Graham was associated the most with that thesis, right, saying if their only choice is, are you going to fight them over there now, or are you going to fight them over here later? This is actually a quotation drawn from one of the Greek orators, right? It says, your choice is not war or peace, but only whether the war will be here at home, or if we get going, we can try to attack the various enemies in their own homeland. So the entire Republican election campaign, the entire demagogy of the fascist Trump, and indeed of the fascist Cruz, is to assume that ISIS is gaining and that nobody's efforts are having any effect. And therefore, of course, as Lindsey Graham pointed out, it's time to send the troops. Well, the American voter, even the American pollsters, have already shown us what Lindsey Graham's ravings are worth. Nothing. He dropped out. He went back into the ash can of history. His amigo, John McCain, and his amiga, Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, who's in the process of selling herself to the highest bidder in terms of endorsements. Same thing with Lindsey. Same thing with many others. But the entire premise of the Republican debates is that ISIS is this growing monster. Well, let's look at reality. And reality looks much different. First thing we have is the important town of Ramadi over there in Anbar province, right? What used to be known as the Scud Box 25 years ago. So this is the situation that we face. Now, Ramadi has been under siege. We've been reporting it. It's been going on for quite a while. And what looks now like the siege is essentially over. It's time to mop up. There's a mopping up action going on in Ramadi against the remnants of the ISIS terrorist forces, so much so that the Iraqi prime minister has just today, that is today, Tuesday, the 29th of December, has just visited the town of Ramadi. And looks like he got in there and out of there alive. The last center of fighting had been around on the government center, the government buildings in this city. But there, ISIS was driven out, and they're down to a couple of hundred fighters. So they're being mopped up. The prime minister of the country has been there. Nevertheless, the poor people here at the Washington Post, you're going to see defeatism oozing out of every pore. They want these elites, both reactionary and left-wing, politically correct, whatever you want. They want to have ISIS hang on longer. So here we have Washington Post of this morning, Tuesday, December 29th. Government forces appeared close to capturing the capital of Iraq's largest province from the Islamic State on Monday, dealing a potentially significant blow to the militant group as it loses territory in both Iraq and Syria. Yes, indeed. The troops are celebrating in the middle of the town. The Iraqi flag is up. Iraqi tanks are in the streets, and it only appears. The prime minister has come and gone. I hope the appearances will solidify themselves into reality for the defeatists and the appeasers, really, at the Washington Post. So this is another, this is a big one because of the fall of Sinjar on November 11th, the great fortress, right, the great Gibraltar of ISIS there in the middle of the road complex, the main road to Mosul. Well, it fell within 24, 48 hours at the very most. And we've still got these think tankers, right, the Beltway bandits on the Pentagon payroll telling us it's going to take 10 years, it's going to take 20 years, it's going to take 30 years, it's going to be the new 100 years war. Well, none of the above. ISIS is a paper tiger. The only reason that ISIS stands is because of the corruption and stupidity of all of its adversaries, all of them, because otherwise that supply line would have been cut. And don't tell me that anybody is free from the opprobrium of not doing that in 2015. It is called the Jarablus Corridor. We've talked about it. It starts at the Euphrates River, starts with the town of Jarablus on the west bank of the Euphrates River, goes about 100 kilometers, and that's the principal, and at this point really the only important supply corridor for the ISIS terrorists, right? Most of the rest of that border has been seized by the Kurds, despite constant attacks by the treacherous and wily Erdogan of Turkey. So close the Jarablus corridor. This is our demand to the world. Our challenge to the world, indeed, as we put out on Christmas Eve, the entire world community has to face the fact that the Jarablus corridor has got to be closed. And the fact that it has not been closed, not by the U.S., not by Russia, not by anybody, is an indictment of human civilization in our time. Back in a minute. World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Mr. Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. It's our newest program, although taped a little bit in advance on the afternoon of the 29th of December. Last program recorded in 2015, first program broadcast in 2016. Happy New Year to everyone. And time to gird your loins for the battles to come, in which, indeed, civilization is still in the gravest danger, if only because it's now New Year's under the shadow of fascism, the hideous fascism of Trump, Cruz, and other reactionaries who are now evolving into outright fascists. And we'll try to discuss some of the problems involved with that process in our second hour here. Now, Ramadi has essentially been liberated by the Iraqi army. Hats off to the Iraqi army. We notice that this disgusting Ashton Carter, right, Dr. Strangelove, the utopian pedant butcher, Ashton Carter, he needs to be fired. He needed to be fired the very day that he got into the Pentagon, right? He seems to think that he's a state within a state, right? A little bit like the SS under Himmler, right? They did what they wanted, right? And they made their stuff up. Every time that Ashton Carter announces more troops for Syria or someplace like this, you really wonder, does he do that all on his own? Does he ask Obama, is there any constitutional process? Does he think that he's the warlord of that Bank of the Potomac over there in Arlington, Virginia, Crystal City, Pentagon City? It's hard to tell with this guy because he doesn't seem to be doing it in the name of anybody but himself. So, a strange love, to be sure, right? Because he's one of those defense intellectuals, right? He's one of those guys in the tradition of Herman Kahn. Right, and Herman Kahn was on nuclear war, including world targets and megadeaths and all the rest of it. That's Ashton Carter, and we want him out. As far as the Iraqi army is concerned, kudos to them. Ashton Carter seemed to have a perverse delight in insulting them when the situation emerged about a year and a half ago, right, when the town of Ramadi and some others, right, be it Tikrit or Fallujah, were captured by ISIS, and the Iraqi army dissolved. And Ashton Carter got out there and said, the Iraqi soldiers ran away. Not quite accurate, Ash. It was the generals who ran away. It was the officers who ran away. And this is exactly, for example, what we had in the fall of France in May of 1940, we have very interesting first-person accounts of French pro-fascist, pro-Hitler officers putting their families into cars and driving away from the front and leaving the troops with nobody, right? And then in that case, the army disintegrates. And we know that the problem of the Iraqi army, of course, was it had been bribed under Mad Dog Bush the Elder, already back in 1990-1991, the officers were bribed that they should not resist in Kuwait. Then the army was severely battered and bribed again in 2003 before they sent in the second Mad Dog Bush family attack on Iraq. The officers were again bribed by the CIA, by the Saudis, by others. And then, excuse me, it's a good omen, huh? The next round of bribery apparently has happened now in the auspices of ISIS. But again, the bribery is from Saudi Arabia. And of course, in the middle of all this, the Iraqi army was destroyed by Jerry Bremer, remember him? He's up there. Don't worry about him. He's in there circling around the Beltway as a Beltway bandit, getting all kinds of money as a consultant. So he was the one who said, destroy the Iraqi army. And the entire drama since then comes from that insane decision, which needed to be overridden by little G.W. Bush. But of course, the Mad Dog Bush family is one of the principal centers of evil in the modern world, so they didn't do it. So you can thank Jerry Bremer for this current situation. So the Iraqi army has proven that if they get some decent leadership, they're about as good as anybody, especially when it comes to fighting the butchers of ISIS, who, as we know, represent the negation of all civilization. Doesn't matter what religion, it's the negation of civilization. Now, a couple of other things have happened. We have the liquidation by the Syrian army, Syrian Arab army, in conjunction with the Russian Air Force. They have killed a person by the name of Zakran Alush. And Zakran Alush is one of the top honchos of the Jaish al-Islam, the Islamic army. This is right in the close-in suburbs of Damascus. It's amazing. I know I stayed when I was there 4 years ago. I was in the Bait al-Wali, one of the finest hotels in the world. That was out on the eastern edge, towards the eastern edge, right? You go to St. Thomas's Gate, Bab Tuma, and you were practically, you were inside the old walls, but sort of on the eastern side. Now, this incident took place in the little bit 4 kilometers south of Damascus, and he was got the joint operation, and this was in the middle of a process by which, under the auspices of Stefan de Mistura of the United Nations, a bunch of defeated ISIS fighters and killers were being put into buses to be shipped under UN auspices over to Raqqa to get them out of the Damascus area, where they can do tremendous mischief, right? You can't have a bunch of dangerous suicidal fanatics within 4 kilometers of your capital city. Why? They might, you know, some fine midnight or 3 a.m. in the morning or whatever, or some afternoon, decide to make a rush for your government buildings. And you've got to make sure that that is not allowed to happen. So it was perfectly in order to remove this character. This Jaish, the Islamic army, and Alush in particular, were part of the delegations that had come to Saudi Arabia. So the Saudi puppet has been removed from the chessboard. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C. Happy New Year 2016 to all concerned. Just doing the rundown on the dire straits, really, of ISIS. And as even New York Times had to report a couple of days ago, a lot of people in Iraq have the idea that the only reason ISIS is existing in any form is because the U.S. in particular is coddling them. Some parts of the U.S. are helping them. And again, I would go back to Catch-22, right? It's Catch-22 with a political overlay, right? It's those guys in Catch-22 who were essentially doing a rogue bootleg operation. Well, now imagine the CIA has taken over the rogue bootleg operations. You could easily have the CIA running operations to feed and assist and supply ISIS with ammunition, spare parts, and all that. That could be the planes that you see. In other words, this government in the United States, and everybody in the world should understand this, this is a highly factionalized government with a very weak executive. Part of the weakness of Obama is his own temperament, his this idiotic stuff about I can work across the aisle, I can end the divisions. It's all idiotic, right? All pointless. And lots of important values have been sacrificed to that particular piece of idiocy, which, of course, he went into to appeal to those fussy independents who want to see more bipartisanship and less partisan wrangling. Well, the partisan wrangling is the only thing saving you from monstrous, horrendous legislation and other, you know, negative. So Obama, very weak. But then there's also his institutional situation. The factional situation also makes him weak. Now, I would, of course, argue that a real president with a real iron will could impose lots of things, put the fear of God into those Republican wreckers on Capitol Hill, right? What would Mitch McConnell say if he and his wife were banned from all state functions at the White House, right? No more state dinners, no more nothing. With his wife yammering in his ear every night, Mitch McConnell would become a somewhat more malleable creature, right? But Obama just, he doesn't like to play rough. He's afraid to play rough. This is, of course, a crippling problem. On the other hand, just playing rough, like Trump, or the bully Trump, right, talking tough, this also gets you nowhere, because there the policy is wrong. So you'd be doing it in the name of something quite evil and retrograde. Anyway, we've gone through the fall of the liberation of Ramadi, we must say, humiliation for Ashton Carter. We've got the killing of the Saudi darling, Zahran Alush, who was being groomed, apparently, as one of the more presentable members of the moderate terrorist opposition, and the Syrian Arab Army and the Russian Air Force combined to end his career as a butcher and killer. In the middle of this, it's significant that this was also the moment when buses filled with defeated ISIS fighters were being sent out away from Damascus and over to Raqqa, where they can simply sit there and await the inevitable air destruction. We've got another leader of Daesh, and this is a group called Jabhar. Sorry, this is a little bit different. Not quite Daesh, if these distinctions mean anything. Jabhar al-Mamouri. This is another one, Jabhar al-Mamouri. And the guy involved is Hashd al-Shabi. And he was also killed. He's another moderate terrorist leader who was then overtaken by combat operations. But in his papers, his person, computer, cell phone, whatever he had, we find indications of multiple contacts with the MIT. Now, you're going to be surprised how many of the terrorist leaders, the moderate terrorist leaders and the ISIS leaders also, how many of them went to MIT, except MIT in this case is the Turkish intelligence. The Turkish intelligence, MIT, has all of these guys working for them. So, as if we needed it, we've got more and more confirmation every week that ISIS and Turkish intelligence are virtually inseparable, that Erdogan is indeed the caliph. The real caliph is Erdogan. He's the operational boss of ISIS, and anything about, you know, he hasn't been energetic enough in cracking down. My God, he's not cracking down. He's the head of it. He's the head of the crime syndicate. He's Al Capone, in effect. Now, all of this comes in the certainly improved context of the December 18th UN Security Council resolution, which lays out a roadmap for a political solution. But it's, of course, safe to say that the main issues will not be settled by speeches and majority votes in the United Nations, but by blood and iron, blood and steel, maybe today, and that will be on the battlefield. So here we have two important moderate terrorist leaders. And remember, the whole fiction that there's an indigenous autochthonous rebellion against Assad by pro-democracy forces who have been radicalized and so forth, this is a big fiction. And the fiction depends on having people like this around, right? This guy, Alush and Mamouri. Sorry, Shabi. Mamouri is the group that he belongs in. Call him Shabi. You'll get the idea. So Alush and Shabi are no longer on the scene. And the existence of those guys was supposed to document moderate terrorists. But, of course, there are no moderate terrorists. A moderate is going to be in the Syrian parliament because they had a chance to run for the parliament, and some of them won, and they have their own faction and whatever. Now, don't take my word for it on all this stuff. We've got a speech by the pseudo-caliph. That is to say, Baghdadi, right? The former U.S. prisoner of war, the guy who met with John McCain a year and a half ago. That's Baghdadi, and he has now apparently issued a major policy statement, and we have here a Middle Eastern commentary on this. Some think Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's latest speech, in other words, the caliph speaking in the first person, this is a sign that Daesh is facing hard times. Well, are they ever? Amid various defeats and intense bombing by Russia and the U.S. coalition, Daesh has released a 23-minute-long speech. It's Baghdadi's New Year's address, I guess, in some sense. So he makes a series of threats, but the principal idea is a cri de cœur. This is a heartfelt call by Baghdadi that he needs help. I think Baghdadi has looked down at his Rolex watch, authentic or knockoff, as the case may be. But Baghdadi's looking at that watch, and he can see that the hands on his Rolex say 11:55. It's 11:55 for him. He is about to be rolled up and mopped up. We'll be back. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. So our situation at the beginning of 2016, New Year's Day in the shadow of fascism. Fascism from Trump. Fascism from Cruz. With all the horrible implications. The perspective is the Republican Party must be destroyed first. It must be swept away by the voters as no longer a national party. And if you could do something to cut the supply line of money going to them, that paper tiger, political paper tiger, would also be exposed. That Democratic Party splits into two parts, and there would be some kind of a revival of the pro-labor, pro-New Deal forces. Although the majority, of course, as we see with Mrs. Clinton, is pro-Wall Street. So we gotta pay attention to structural changes, right? There are personalities, and we have to deal with those, and we do deal with those. But how about the structure, the whole playing field, right? The Southern strategy went from 1968 to 2008, or about that. But now we've got to try to institutionalize more changes. It's time for the Republicans to go the way of the Federalists and the Whigs, and then we can work out the personalities. But now back to the Middle East. Ramadi has been liberated. Ashton Carter has egg all over his face. We've got the killing of the Jaish Tapancho, Alush. We've got lots of ISIS killers and other killers. They're interchangeable. Leaving Damascus for Raqqa. We've got the leader of the Jabhar al-Mamouri group killed on the battlefield and loaded with evidence that he actually works for the Turkish intelligence, MIT. It's all happening. This is working out the seating arrangements, I guess, at the in the conference, which is contemplated by the December 18th United Nations resolution. Now, Baghdadi, again, looking down at his Rolex, it's 11:55. So let's sample his speech as it has been made available. You get the idea that, again, the thing, there is no joy in Mudville, right? There is no joy in Raqqa. The idea being, you're going through the valley of despair, But tough it out, he says, right? Durchhalten is the word from the Caliph, Baghdadi. Here he goes. He says, we praise Allah for commanding us with fighting and promising us one of two good ends, for he has not made us responsible for victory. Allah says, he who fights in the cause of Allah and is killed or achieves victory, we bestow upon him a great reward. So it is only upon us to fight and be patient. Upon Allah is the victory. For this reason, we should not let the mobilization of the nations of Kufar, right? In other words, don't let the mobilization of the infidel nations alarm us, frighten us, or break our resolve, for we will be the victors in any case. So you're going through all of these problems. It's a time of hardship, but this is all part of the plan. So this is a pretty desperate statement. So if we persist in the face of the world and fight all its armies with all their capabilities and then triumph, it will be no surprise. Rather, affliction is an inevitable decree. And then it has a whole part about, did you think you were going to get into paradise on the cheap? But suffering is part of the equation. Do not be amazed at the gathering of the nations and religions of disbelief, the Kufar, against the Islamic State, for this is the condition of the victorious in every era. This gathering will continue, and the trials and tribulations will intensify until the two camps are completed. So you get the idea. It is but the war of the nation disbelief altogether against the Ummah, the Commonwealth of Islam, and it has not occurred before in the history of our Ummah that the entire world gathered against it in one battle, as is occurring today. So the idea is, he puts out a call to Muslims everywhere, prepare yourself while being confident of Allah's victory. Prepare yourself and do not weaken and do not grieve. They will not fight you all except within fortified cities or behind walls. Their violence among themselves is severe. You think they are together, but their hearts are diverse. And he points out to the various religious components of this. So the New York Times, ISIS facing losses, releases recording said to be of the leader. Principally, the Islamic State on Saturday released an audio, that would be December 26th, released an audio recording of a speech purportedly made by the organization's leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in which he implored more Muslims to fight on behalf of his increasingly besieged group. It's the first alleged statement from Baghdadi since May, and at that time, you'll recall, there were reports that he had been killed or severely wounded by airstrikes. So he mocks the claim by Saudi Arabia to be forming a military coalition of Muslim countries. According to the New York Times, the defeat in Ramadi would be, why don't we change that to, the defeat of ISIS in Ramadi is the fourth major loss for the Islamic State in Iraq since April, when Iraqi forces and Shiite militias drove the group out of Tikrit. So we've had Tikrit, we've had Sinjar in November, now we've got Ramadi, and certainly other things are going on. I don't know what they don't tell you the list of four, but you get the idea. So it's a plea for recruiting. He says more people should come here. And they, of course, have reached the point of crisis. The this myth of invincibility has been punctured. During 2015, the Kurds have taken most of the border, including the key transit point of Kobane, and at the same time, losses have mounted. Lots of famous commanders and butchers have been removed from the field. Raqqa has been repeatedly bombed by the U.S., the Russians, the French, the British probably too. So this looks very grim. But again, all of this could have been over at the beginning of November or October. As soon as Kobane had fallen and as soon as the Kurds had extended their control of the border area right up to the east bank of the Euphrates, that was the moment when that corridor had to be interdicted. Now, of course, on the U.S. side, what you see is people like Allen and Petraeus and so forth who want to keep ISIS intact because they want to use that as their CIA secret army, send it against Iran, send it against Russia, send it against Central Asia, against China, ultimately. Lots and lots of things can be done with that. I have the impression that the Russian side would like to see this whole thing go to a peace conference. In other words, I think on the Russian side, there may be less interest in destroying ISIS on the battlefield, but rather something in the way of more interest to see what can be gotten out of a peace conference. And I think everybody, ISIS of morality, close the Gerapolis corridor. One humanitarian, close the Gerapolis corridor. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio, our New Year's Day 2016 program. Best wishes for a happy new year to all persons of good will. Now, we've done justice to this turning point, I hope, that ISIS is being exposed as a paper tiger. They are immensely vulnerable. They can be destroyed. They should be destroyed. They must be destroyed. And you don't need to wait for a conference to somehow validate that. All you need to do is close the Jarablus corridor. And that, of course, will cause the most colossal freakout by the Erdogan clique in Ankara, with Davutoglu theorizing, right, an intolerable affront to the new Turkish Sultan and Caliph, Erdogan, who is really the guy who, tells Baghdadi, you know, what time it is on his Rolex. But now we gotta maybe look at a bit of background on this stuff, right? We're getting to the point, in the Obama administration where he's got about a year left. So he is in advanced lame duck status. Unless he wants to be something else, and we would urge him to try hard to be something else, certainly do something better, in 2015, 2016 than you've done in 2015, the last year. And the legacy ought to be wiping out ISIS, right? Obama, you want to have, some kind of a, legacy? Your legacy is that you have to finish off ISIS during the primary season and then have an election based on economics, and these questions of recovery from the long-lasting 2008 depression. But now we've also got various groups. It's time for the intelligence cleanup. We have these moments here in Washington at the end of Iran-Contra. There was a kind of a cleanup. That actually got quite messy. That included wet work all around the world. That was essentially George H.W. Bush trying to clean up his own act by removing people who could have given, you know, embarrassing testimony against him. But now I think we've got a kind of a war of leaks. And I am puzzled to look at an article called Military to Military, written by Seymour Hersh, right, the famous Cy Hersh, published in the London review of books. I guess his thesis is that he's so controversial, or has become so, that he can only publish in the London Review of Books. And he writes about U.S. intelligence sharing in the Syrian war. Now, the idea about this is that Hirsch tries to paint Obama as somebody who has repeatedly insisted that Bashar al-Assad must leave office, and that there are moderate rebel groups in Syria capable of defeating him. Hirsch's thesis, and it's obviously based on leaks, this notion by Obama has provoked quiet dissent and even overt opposition among some of the most senior officers on the Pentagon's joint staff. Their criticism has focused on what they see as the administration's fixation on Assad's primary ally, Vladimir Putin. In their view, Obama is captive to Cold War thinking about Russia and China, and hasn't adjusted his stance on Syria to the fact that both countries share Washington's anxiety about the spread of terrorism in and beyond Syria. Like Washington, they believe that the Islamic State must be stopped. So what we then get is, I regard it as a rather fanciful version of the facts. We're told that Joint Chief of Staff Chairman Martin Dempsey, General Martin Dempsey, assembled a highly classified assessment in summer 2013, according to which the fall of the Assad regime would lead to chaos and the takeover of Syria by jihadi extremists, much as was then happening in Libya. And the principal source for this article by Seymour Hirsch is a former senior advisor to the Joint Chiefs. And this guy seems to be playing a key role. There is, I think, rather mild criticism of Turkey. And we hear a lot from Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, the director of the DIA between 2012 and 2014. Now, my impression of a lot of this stuff is that people are generating posterity papers. They are trying to muddy the waters. They're trying to say, look, I was there, but believe me, I was not on the side of bombing Assad to kingdom come, even though many of these same figures are on the public record with warmonger statements. A lot of these people that are now being rehabilitated in this article by Seymour Hirsch, they are the people who were demanding to clobber Assad, bomb him back into the Stone Age. This was what they did. And now it seems to me a certain couverture, a certain coverage of the posteriors is now being developed by Dempsey. I'll just go through a couple of things about this. The notion that Obama is the warmonger, since at least 2013, since the Ghouta chemical weapons fraud, is obviously wrong. Obama is not the biggest warmonger. There are other warmongers that are much bigger. The most obvious ones are disgruntled, politically ambitious Bonapartists, or neo-Bonapartists, of the Petraeus, Allen, and quite possibly Breedlove clique. In this article by Hirsch, not much attention given to ISIS czar Allen, John Allen. And, you know, he was our main focus for the period from July to September, October of this year, 2015, last year by now, by the time you hear this. So there's not much about Allen, how Allen was essentially the lawyer in Washington. He was essentially the personal envoy of Erdogan and the Saudi royal family, telling Obama he had to go for a no-fly zone, which means a comprehensive bombing campaign over all of Syria, airports, air bases, anti-aircraft defense facilities, hangars, you know the drill. Everything had to be, and then of course once you're bombing, you just bomb away, right? It doesn't end. So there's not much in here about that. And, I would also say a lot of these people are now having themselves portrayed in a way which is the opposite. Okay. So the principal thing is there's a clique of these, recalcitrant, insubordinate officers who want to do their own thing. And you might ask, who are they? They're the ones on the whole that Carly Fiorina was talking about in the last Republican debate when she said that, you know, she liked, Petraeus, she liked Keene, she liked McChrystal. This is all this clique of disgruntled, defeated, generals, right? They should be in American Limoges, but they're not. They're free to shoot their mouths off. So those are the guys who wanted to bomb Assad. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Happy New Year 2016 to all. You are committed, making this resolution. Come out and work with the Tax Wall Street Party, the United Front Against Austerity. Time to subscribe to our daily briefing. I write for the daily briefing every chance I get. Many weeks, the past year, it's been every day. So if you want to sample my thinking, subscribe. Go to twsp.us and you'll find how to subscribe, how to get the daily briefing. And if you want to become more closely associated with the Tax Wall Street Party, you can find that there too. There is a daily briefing sent out. There's a weekly, conference call. There are all kinds of interesting things, and persons of intelligence and goodwill are, cordially invited to come forward. But let's just pause for a second on this thing, right? In that last, Republican debate, Carly Fiorina made a statement about how she would revamp the U.S. military, okay? And this tells us a lot. Carly Fiorina is the confidant of General Hayden, right? General Michael Hayden, I think. He's the former head of the CIA. He's the former head of the NSA. And he's a big mouth, right? People, there were all these stories, right? You could hear him in the Acela from Union Station to Penn Station in New York. You could hear the voice of General Hayden, CIA, NSA. So in the course of this Republican debate, Carly Fiorina, obviously consultant and asset to NSA, CIA, intelligence community, personal protege of General Hayden, General Michael Hayden, she's asked, what would you do to revive the military? And she said, I would bring back the warrior class. Bring back the warrior class? Who are they? Well, General David Petraeus. General David Petraeus is also a darling of the fascist Trump. Petraeus is one that Trump has mentioned. I think vice president would be the principal destination for somebody like Petraeus, right? When, as one acute observer told me, when you hear Trump say, my vice president would have to be somebody who could be president, that would be the Bonapartist warmonger and recalcitrant insubordinate General Petraeus. And remember, Petraeus was the head of the CIA at the time of Benghazi, right, in the 2012 election run-up. That September 11th, 2012, Petraeus commanded the CIA paramilitaries who were close by and did nothing. So take the chain of command, take it up. Ultimately, that chain of command, as far as those paramilitary guys in the CIA annex is concerned, Petraeus is the one. But Carly Fiorina says she wants Petraeus. She wants General McChrystal. This is somebody who is obviously in rebellion against civilian authority. He's insubordinate. He had to be fired. Then she mentions General Keene. General Keene, of course, is that think tank, the Institute for the Study of War, where he cavorts with Kimberly Kagan of the Kagan clan, with Donald Kagan, and the pudgy field marshal, Frederick Kagan, author of The Surge, who, these are people, Kimberly and Frederick Kagan, got incorporated into the U.S. chain of command in Afghanistan illegally by Petraeus. So, of course, this is somebody they like. General Keane, you see him on Fox News, right? He shoots his mouth off all the time. Monster Mattis, they like. Monster Mattis, another defeated warmonger. And General Flynn. Now, General Flynn, General Flynn is the guy that Seymour Hersh is relying on in this, I mean, it's somebody who's cited as a kind of a hero of anti-Obama rationality. So again, the thesis built around these leaks by Seymour Hersh is that Obama's the big warmonger, and these characters in the military, Dempsey and others, those are the good guys. They're the ones, he argues, he tries to show with these leaks, right? The I was told won't cut it. It's got to be compared to the public record, checked, verified, vetted. I was told is not good enough. So what he's told is that Dempsey superintended a kind of deliberate leaking process by which the U.S. military would share intelligence with Germany, right, BRD, and Israel, knowing that Germany and Israel also have certain contacts with other groups, including Assad, right, that there are backdoor intelligence sharing arrangements. Okay, so this was Dempsey's way, for example, if he knew of an important ISIS concentration, allegedly according to these relatively anonymous leaks, that information was then shunted over to Germany and Israel with the expectation that they would leak it further to Assad. The problem with this is not what these people were doing in public. You look up somebody like General Flynn, and you'll see that the most recent story on something like Breitbart, right, ultra-reactionary, they are quoting, they give you an interview with Flynn from a couple of months ago where he says, Obama is a disaster, his policy is not working. And the innuendo is always, you got to do more. What do you got to do? You got to have a no-fly zone, bomb Syria is what that means, and you've got to have a safe haven for terrorists, right, in precisely to cover the Jarablus corridor. Now, I just wanted also to point out, Obama, beginning of October, Obama had this interesting press conference where he said, the situation. What I'd like to see people ask is specifically, precisely, what exactly would you do and how would you fund it and how would you sustain it? And typically what you get is a bunch of mumbo jumbo. This also seems to apply to warmonger Hillary Clinton. And he says, Obama says, that's what I'll continue to apply as long as I'm here, Obama. And if and when she's president, then she can make the judgments. Okay. So here we have some leaks that tend to make a group of one of Carly Fiorina's warriors look good. But we're extremely skeptical. A little bit more in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. It's our New Year's edition. Keep up with everything at Tarpley.net, Tarpley.net. Remember, there are 12 days of Christmas. Epiphany is another occasion for gift giving. Go to Tarpley.net and select one of my books that you do not have and make sure that you put that in the hands of somebody who can profit from it or at least be neutralized by it. And that's, again, the tip for the entire year, Tarpley.net. You can see my Twitter feed. You can see the daily briefing, special messages that we do from time to time. Our message on the French terrorism on November 13th has been viewed by more than 20,000 viewers, which is quite respectable compared even to certain political figures who get a lot of free media that we don't get. So let's just look at this situation once again. Seymour Hersh, of course, of the My Lai massacre and so many other things, and often quite useful in terms of the Ghouta chemical weapons fraud of August, September 2013. Seymour Hersh, quite useful at that point. This one, I think, not useful. Military to military. It's in the London Review of Books, number one of 7th of January, 2016. And he wants to tell you, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, director of the DIA between 2012 and 2014, confirmed that his agency had sent a constant stream of classified warnings to the civilian leadership about the dire consequences of toppling Assad. Now, the irony here is that we don't hear anything about the big attempt to topple Assad, which was in the summer, I believe, July of 2012, which was the attempt to decapitate the entire Syrian leadership. And they had an inside person who brought bombs in and so forth. So now Michael Flynn is trying to restore his own virginity on this matter by saying, oh yeah, we were trying to help Assad all the time. And he said the jihadists were controlling the opposition. Turkey wasn't doing enough to stop the smuggling of foreign fighters and weapons across the border, says Michael Flynn. My God, Turkey is masterminding the smuggling of foreign fighters and weapons across the border. So all of this stuff looks like a lot of flim-flam. Dempsey said that the fall of the Assad regime would lead to chaos and potentially to Syria's takeover by jihadi extremists, much as was then happening in Libya. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let's go back again. Carly Fiorina in that, one of the biggest warmongers, right? She knows what she's doing. And, here's what she says. Republican debate, December 15th. One of the things I would immediately do, in addition to defeating them here at home, is to bring back the warrior class. Petraeus, biggest Bonapartist. McChrystal, rejects civilian leadership of the military. Mattis, monster Mattis. General Keane, resident warmonger at the Kimberley, the various Kagan institutions. And Flynn, precisely this Flynn. So Flynn, shooting his mouth off, even quite recently, right, in recent weeks, saying that Obama's totally inadequate. Now, Obama's pushback, I think, against quite a few of these people is the issue. It's the press conference about the mumbo jumbo, and that would be Obama at the beginning of October, as we've just said, right? He's out of half-baked mumbo jumbo from warmongers, and there was no doubt this was about the warmongers. So let's just take a look at a couple of the reasons why this particular construct will not fly. After the Ghouta case, right, in November 2013, after Obama had turned away from war at the last minute, and it was good that he did it under the influence of the Russians, we get a bunch of hawk generals attacking Obama because he didn't respect his own red line. They wanted war. He didn't get it. September 2014, part of the same continuity, we get General Keane saying the generals are standing up against Obama on the question of ISIS strategy. In other words, they want, God knows what, no-fly zone, a safe area to make sure that the ISIS supply line remains open, and so forth. Obama counterattacked the Iraq generals in September 2014. And this also came out. There was a moment when the National Security Council criticized Israel, and Dempsey, this is fall of 2015, Dempsey actively undermined Obama's criticism of what the Israelis were doing in Gaza. We've also got the failed Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, coming out against the Obama White House. And we have one instance here where Obama said, I will not be putting large numbers of U.S. troops on the ground. I'm not going to have a combat force. I'm going to have advisors, but nothing more. And Dempsey, a week later, came out and said, I am actively considering whether or not to ask Obama to put boots on the ground. So I think this is a bit of flim-flam from the generals over there in the Pentagon, who I believe are interested in covering their posteriors, because soon Obama will be gone. 1 year, Obama's gone. It's not that long. Those generals, a lot of them, want to remain, or they want to make a comeback. So I think this is not reliable. We have to thank Seymour Hersh for the two articles he did, 2013, 2014, about the fraud of the Gutha chemical incident, right? Manufactured, I would say now, by Turkey and Saudi Arabia primarily. But no thanks are due for this piece of essentially, I think it's fantastic. And here's the idea. There are a number of ways to do the kind of business that intelligence represents. One way is that you have lots of sources and you repeat what the sources have told you. I would not do it this way. I don't do it this way. My method is that of the absolute idea. In other words, the application of human reason to a mass of empirical data. You have to develop profiles of these individuals. You've got to develop profiles of the institutions. You've got to develop a feel for what they're doing, including what they say, but also relativizing what they say with facts that you know independently and also with the overall situation. That's my method. It's open source and it's based on human reason in itself and for itself, right? The absolute idea. And it means that when somebody tells you something, you don't just go out there and say, I'm told. You've got to evaluate it. And sometimes it's bunk. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. We've come to the last segment of our New Year's program. Happy 2016. Happy New Year to everybody. Keep up with us at Tarpley.net through the daily briefing and other things. Now, in that daily briefing, we have taken it upon ourselves to try to educate people in the ins and outs of fascism and Nazism. And the occasion, of course, is the emergence of a fascist threat in the United States with the incendiary, racist, and anti-worker statements by the Donald, from the Duce to the Donald. Donald Trump, an authentic fascist. We lament very much the disinformation or confusion which made President Putin of Russia seem to endorse this fascist. We've written about that in the daily briefing. Not a good idea to endorse a fascist. Doubly bad idea if it's in a foreign country, right? The stuff about non-interference in the internal affairs of sovereign states is important, and these words are unfortunately very disorienting to a lot of people. Trump is a fascist. He's a liar. He's a scoundrel. And If we look late this past week, his main attack has been against Hillary Clinton, and some friendly network dug up tapes of Trump in 2008 warmly endorsing Hillary Clinton. She was so much better than some other candidate. So changeability, fickleness, irrationality, unpredictability, these are the hallmarks of fascist demagogues, and that is Trump to a T. Just before we turn away from Seymour Hersh, remember, Thierry Masson, getting sources at the other end of all this, we've had on the Voltaire Network, and he's been kind enough to come on here and talk about it, the idea being that from the Syrian or Middle East point of view, it appeared that Obama was the one who was covertly encouraging Putin to put the Russian forces into Syria. So he's not objecting. He may even have been encouraging. And of course, it doesn't do any good to parse every statement by Obama as if they're all equal. In other words, there's a kind of litany which is more or less the routine, right? It's the rigueur saying Assad has to go. Fine. You repeat that every time. Otherwise, you have egg on your face and you've given these enemies another stick to beat you with. But the idea of attempting to recast the warrior class with those guys that we just heard about, right, from Carly Fiorina, Petraeus, McChrystal, Flynn, Keane, and Mattis, those are your incompetent warmongers. Those are the Bonapartists, okay? And anything that's supposed to make them look good, in sharp contrast to their public stances, this is unacceptable. It has to be addressed, and you can't just ignore all those public statements. Let's think about fascism. Take a look at the most recent, by the time you get this, it'll be superseded by some others, but the daily briefing of Tuesday, December 29th, which goes into one of the observations made by scholars of fascism in the 40s, 50s, 60s. The art of fascism is to present yourself as being an anti-establishment radical without at the same time attacking Wall Street or the Federal Reserve, okay? That is Trump's art of fascism. We know Trump has proudly written the art of the deal. How about the art of fascism? That is, sound radical, but ultimately it's a very narrow and very timid and very limited critique dressed up in a lot of demagogy. And, of course, based on scapegoating, Newt Gingrich once said, the average Republican congressman cannot understand ideas, but only understands people. The abstraction is too much for them. And so, a fortiori for the now more degraded Republican base, which is shot through with fascism itself. So, what you've got to do is sound radical, but find ways of unloading the hatred against Wall Street on others, obviously on foreigners, right? What does Trump do? He says the Chinese are bad, the Mexicans are bad, Japan is bad, on and on, a line of bad people. How about the Wall Street bankers that started the Depression with their derivatives in 2007, 2008, made possible by the Clinton administration, be sure. The other one is, of course, scapegoating different groups. Hey, Trump says no increase in the minimum wage. Wages are already too high, says Trump, the multi-billionaire. Another way you can take the heat off the bankers is simply forget about them and focus on their front men, right? That's what a front man is supposed to do. He's supposed to take the slings and arrows, and you stay hidden in the background. So those are the politicians. That's Harry Reid. That's all of these characters. Remember, fascist revolution for the fascist activists means kick out the bourgeois politician and replace them with fascist goons. And that's it. as far as the fascist leaders are concerned, the plebeians might have a different idea, right? But as far as Hitler and Mussolini were concerned, it's take over the parliament, take over government, fill those slots with fascists, but don't try to seize control of banking, of industry, of the army and the navy. This is why, one of the reasons why, from the point of view of an industrialist or a banker, especially, fascism is not that big of a challenge because they're allowed to keep their positions of power. In fact, they gain power. Whereas, if you have a communist takeover, like Soviet Union or anything like that, indeed then the bankers, the industrialists, the army, the navy, and the rest of them, those are all taken over by the communists. So this is one reason why the ruling class of the entire world, essentially in the 20s and 30s, began looking to Mussolini and then also to Hitler as a bulwark against Bolshevism. In order to make yourself sound radical, you have a policy of insults. Let's see, we have a insults here from Hitler. Hitler says that the bourgeoisie, right? In other words, these establishment politicians, that they are rotten in their methods. Here, Hitler targeted the entire bourgeoisie, the whole ruling class, as cowardly, senile, intellectually rotten, morons, cretins. So, similar to Trump. Excuse me again. So, that's the idea. So, of course, all of this abuse is simply acting out, you know, various levels of hostility. Where are the institutional reforms? Blaming stupidity is a very convenient trick for a fascist demagogue like Trump. If the cause of national decline is just stupid people caving in with bad deals with China or Mexico or Japan, then we don't need to talk about nationalizing the Federal Reserve. We don't need to talk about 0% long-term federal credit for infrastructure, energy production, education, student loan refinancing at 0% with a maturity that can be as long as you want, up to 100 years. You don't have to do any of that. So bombastic turbulence. And we will continue to expose the fascism of Trump and his Carl Icahn and General Petraeus are going to get started. So Happy New Year. We'll see you again next week on World Crisis Radio. In the meantime, twsp.us, subscribe to the briefing.